I'm Dime Roberts, and welcome to Stage and Studio on Arts Watch. It's Pride Month, and our friends at Fuse Theater Ensemble is celebrating a decade of producing their mission of paradigm-shifting theater. Fuse has included a new project for Pride Month called Blackout, and that's Black with a Q, which is intended to be an incubator for Black and queer artists to nurture and grow their work. Blackout is the brainchild of my returning guest, James R. Dixon, who is the producing artistic director of this new incubator. Dixon is a Portland-based director, actor, and arts administrator. He's also an intersectional equity facilitator and a member of the Accountability Collective and an active member of Fuse Theater Ensemble, where he directed the hit show Booty Candy, I love saying that word, a daring and funny play by Robert O'Hara. And during Pride Month, he's now producing virtual readings of three very new and exciting plays for Blackout. Hey, James, it's good to talk with you again.
Hello. Thanks for that introduction. I'm like, is that me? Thank you.
That is you. Also with us is associate producer of Blackout, Tyler Andrew Jones. As an actor, Jones has toured Egypt as Matt in The Fantastics for Artist Repertory Theater's RA production. He's played Jack in Into the Woods at Broadway Rose Theater, and he was in Boom Crackle Fly at Milagro Theater, and originated the role of X-Ray in the world premiere production of Small Steps at Oregon Children's Theater. Jones is also an alum of Third Rail Repertory Theater's mentorship company, and he's currently creating his first solo cabaret, Little Dark Star, set to premiere in early 2022. Welcome, Tyler.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, welcome to Stage and Studio to you both, and happy Pride Month to you both. Now, James, it's been almost, I don't know if you can believe it, but it's been almost a full year since we last talked.
Oh, wow.
I mean, June. Around this time. And during that time, the world has changed a bit. We were shut down during a pandemic, right? Or shut in. And it was a tumultuous time of racial reckoning. And so much has happened in the last year. How has life changed for you during this last year, James?
It's definitely been a very interesting year. It's like I went through five career changes in a matter of months. And I think a lot of that is just having this idea of how your career is supposed to go, what work you're supposed to be doing, and then realizing that the world is changing. And with that change, man, I 2 months of sitting in a room by myself with hardly any contact. And back then we were wiping every surface when we went outside, you know, it's like super clean, toilet paper's gone, you know, and then these protests, it's almost like you have to simplify everything down and sit with yourself for a while and decide how you want to move forward in this new world. So it's taken me a while to come around. The Capitol riots were really hard for me. And I remember not wanting to create anymore, not wanting to do any more work. And then all of a sudden I said, we have to keep moving forward. I have to catch my breath and think about exactly what I want to do right now. What should I be doing right now? How can I best serve my community? So that's how Blackout came about. I came up with this idea on my Facebook page. You know, I put up a graphic that said there are Black people in the future, you know, and just thinking about creating a space where we can get together, talk, create, tell stories without worrying about what's happening in the world, just worrying about lifting ourselves up and telling our stories and rebuilding resilience from storytelling. That's pretty much where I went with it. So
I want to talk more about Blackout. Obviously, I also just remembered that we did talk with each other a few months later after the June interview that I did with you. And I moderated a panel for Matter, which was a phenomenal production that you directed at Portland Playhouse of Charles Grant's performance and his script too. So, you know, so a lot has been happening, definitely.
Oh my God, it feels like a year ago.
It was kind of a year ago. Yeah, a little bit less for that one. But if you were to pick a rose and a thorn for the last year, what would the rose be and what would be the thorn?
What would the rose be and what would the thorn be? Ugh. Honestly, the Rose just came about a week ago. We had our first rehearsal for the show that Tyler Andrew Jones and Charles Grant are directing, which we'll talk about here in a bit. And I just saw black faces. I mean, it's virtual, but just being in a room full of fresh, young black faces, and or just black faces in general across the age spectrum. But I was just, I thought I was going to cry. that was the Rose for me. That was what I was wanting. I was wanting more community. I was wanting to see us in a room together and with people that want to be there, that want to be a part of this. The Thorn, the protests have been hard. You know, it's hard to, you know, I mental health is something I talk a lot about, you know, and not just personal mental health, but collective mental health, not just in the black community. With what's happened in the Asian community, there's so many communities hurting right now, and we have to find new ways to take care of ourselves. So riding that wave has been a thorn, you know, because putting together this festival is really hard. And a lot of us have to work day jobs, and a lot of us can't make it to rehearsals and don't have the resource. You know, how do we create abundance and tell stories and provide lateral mentorship at a time like this? So it's definitely been a thorn, but yeah, I feel really good where we're at.
Well, I want to ask Tyler the same question, but first, Tyler, have you always lived in Portland, or did you move to Portland at a certain time?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Hillsboro, a suburb of Portland. And then I went to college in New York, stayed for a couple of years, came back to do Jack and Into the Woods, and just decided to stay for a bit. So I found myself in this space again.
Well, that's so good to hear that you grew up in Hillsboro. That's great.
Yeah.
So if you were to pick a rose and a thorn for last year, what would yours be?
It's going to be very similar to James's. I would say that my rose would be this project. I knew that it was going to be something wonderful and exciting when James brought it up to me. But when we started the first rehearsal of my lovely cast and my co-director, Charles Grant, and I, it was just so overwhelming. And the love and community in that space, it feels like we're in the same room. We talk a lot during rehearsals about the ritual of performing and the ritual of being artists. And I feel like as a group of Black people, we're really settling into that together. And it just feels so good. I'm just really excited about it. And I would probably say, you know, the thorn would also be, mental health has been a bit rough, you know, I think for everyone. But I think that to be a POC, to be a Black person this year has been specifically difficult. And I found myself a lot of times really having to take space for myself and really think about my own personal mental health. So yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle, but much like what it means to be a Black person, we keep on coming.
Yeah, because even, you know, when people are showing support, that can also be stressful too.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I hate to laugh about it, but it's like, it takes so much work to answer the emails and what can we do kind of things, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even how are you? That's a big question. So I totally get that. So James, when we talked, you know, last year, we talked also about bringing more awareness to Black, trans, and LGBTQI+ communities. And it looks like you're doing that in a big way with Blackout. When did you get this brainchild?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to be in an environment where we could tell more Black queer stories. And it's just a matter of who and what, and am I the person to do that? Who do I invite into the room? What do people want to see? You know, there's so many questions, right? And then you spend a couple months just bouncing around with that. And then you just have to start talking to folks, you know? So this is where that came from. Just getting people on Zoom calls, getting them in the room. Some folks from out of state have become great mentors as well. And realizing that there's other folks out there, even in larger cities like New York, that are having just as much of a hard time being in an incubator where we can tell Black queer stories. So it became present that we needed it now more than anything else. And I was really grateful that Fuse and Rusty Tennant wanted to prioritize this with this year's Outright Festival. So they made me an offer and I just couldn't turn it down. Yeah.
It does seem like the Fuse Theater Ensemble would seem to be the ideal home for this project. I do you see this as a yearly thing? I know we're sort of talking in the future, but I'm wondering if this could be something that happens every year.
Honestly, you know, this is the start. If we were doing this in person, it'd be a much different festival likely, but I'd love to think of this as a seed that we're planting. And yes, I would love for this to be annual, but honestly, I'd love to tell Black queer stories year round. And not just me or at Fuse, I'd love to see this become something similar to Fertile Ground, where other theater companies can say, yes, I want to answer to the call to telling more Black queer stories and maybe feature something during Blackout. And this can be an event that happens at multiple theater companies for the month of, for Pride Month, or even for a weekend during Pride Month. I think that's something that other theater companies could commit to. And I'd hope to start having those discussions as well. That's my big dream for it. But at a bare minimum, this, I at least would love to do this annually.
Well, James, I loved how you have embraced the role of director. And I know, you know, I've known you for years as an actor. And when you were looking to produce Booty Candy, a play that Portland had never produced before, you had this realization, like so many of us have had to do, like if you want it to be done right, you have to direct it yourself, right?
Yes.
So, you know, now you're having to produce it too, right? So, I mean, are you loving it? Are you loving this role for you, these two roles of director as well as producer?
That's a big question. I definitely love it. It's so terrifying. It's terrifying and exciting. And, you know, I've learned over the years that everything that terrifies me is just what I should be doing. I'm really glad that I connected with Tyler Andrew Jones here. I said, hey, do you want to direct a play? You know, I was going to direct all of them. I'm like, I can't do that. There's room for other folks to, you know, do some work here. And Tyler was really excited to jump on board. And I mean, relatively afterward, offered the position to be an associate producer with me, helping with casting. And so I love that I can do the work that I want to do, but also invite other folks in to do the work they want to do. And that's, I'd love to duplicate that as much as possible with this. So that feels really good.
Well, Tyler, you know, many people have the dream of directing, but not a lot of people dream about producing. I mean, I'm just going to be, you know, it's kind of a thankless job having done it for many years, you know, but it's a necessary job. Had you ever produced before, Tyler?
You know, I am also a playwright and I wrote a show that I produced at the New York International Fringe Festival in 2017. And I hated it so much. Producing was so hard. And honestly, you know, I love this project so much because I'm learning a new way of doing it. I had said at that time, I'm never going to do that again. The fundraising, the schmoozing, oof, it was hard for me. So I've emotionally come to this kicking and screaming in my head. When James was like, would you like to be associate producer? I was like, oh, is that what I'm doing? That's amazing. Because it's, you know, in this project, this is just like, it's just so much joy. Right. And I didn't realize that it could be a part of it. So, yeah.
Well, you know, you've spoken like a true producer because most of the time you do go, I hate this, but somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it should be something that you don't enjoy because honestly, it's really hard and thankless. So I'm just, I really love that you're doing it because it has to be done and you have to do it the right way. Yeah. And who else is going to do it? So there you go. That's your answer. You're going to have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy it, but I can see the fruit.
Yeah.
And and it's right there. It's right there. And that's got to be worth it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I totally get that. So let's talk about these three plays that were selected. And I want to find out more about each one. But how did you choose just three? You know, that must have been really difficult choices.
It was really hard. I went through this phase of like asking for playwrights to submit stuff, asking other people, hey, what are you working on? Any experimental stuff you want to work on? I was thinking about Afrofuturism and what it means to see our people in the future, and not just in the future, but dating back, you know, removing white supremacy from our existences and imagining what those existences can look like. And it's, I mean, that's a broad, wide way of thinking of it, but eventually I just had to hone in, and I, Rusty came along and offered some assistance and had access to a lot of writers of color that I hadn't been aware of. So Rusty gave me a set of plays to read through, and that's how I decided on these three.
And that's Rusty Tennant, who is the artistic director of a Fuse Theater Ensemble too. Yes.
Yes, they are for sure. Yeah. And so they're just like, hey, what kind of support do you need? I'm here for you. I can read some plays. I can offer some stuff. And I was really thankful for that because, you know, part of my mental health journey. I'm not ashamed to say it. I have PTSD, I have major anxiety, you know, I go to therapy, but it's just really hard to focus sometimes. You're working full time and trying to stay in this. So it was really great to have someone that also shared a vision in this and wanted to offer some support. So I just want to give a shout out to Rusty Tennant for their support as well in this. So I relied heavily on them for this. And we came up with these three plays, which touch on three very different intimate topics.
Well, let's start off with The Children of Edgar and Nina by Jarrett McGreary.
Well, I'll be directing this piece, and it's Tyler is very well read on these plays. So I know Tyler will have something to add. We haven't started rehearsal yet, but it centers two Black men and the different paths that they take toward what it means to be a Black man, and especially in a modern world. And this story is navigated by a Black woman named Venus. And she's kind of a bit of a catalyst between the two, kind of narrating the story with music and poetry. We've got Monique Aldred, who's playing Venus, and we've got Kenzie James, who's a very talented actor, zooming in from New York. We had to expand out because we had a hard time with casting locally. And then, of course, we've got Tyler Andrew Jones, who's playing Felix, which is, I'm really excited to have Tyler in two different ways for the festival. So do you want to talk more about this piece, Tyler?
You know, when I read this, it's just beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I sat after reading it and cried for a minute and then texted James, how dare you? You know, it's just a love. I can't wait for people to see it. It's so good.
You were starting to say it was a love something, like a love letter perhaps, or?
I think it's a love story. Yeah, but it's a love story in so many different ways. So to say this is a love story might not do it justice. It's expansive.
Well, that's exciting. And part of what makes producing fun is if you get to do something artistic, you know, so you're also co-directing as well as being in this production. I think it helps so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, the next one is, the title is amazing, but it's also got an alternative reality angle to it, which I love being a sci-fi fan. And the title is Apologies to Lorraine Hansberry, You Too, August Wilson by Rachel Lynette. And Lynette is a Kilroy's List playwright. And for people who don't know what that is, those are plays by women who identify as women that need to be looked at because they're amazing plays that haven't been produced. That's part of why it's on the Kilroy's List. These are plays that have not been produced. And Lynette is also the winner of the Yale Drama Prize. So it's set in a fictional world. I did read this description where a second civil war took place and the characters live in a Black utopia of Bronx Bay, an all-Black state and neighborhood. So that would seem like kind of an ideal location right now, so for the Black community. So tell us more about that play.
Well, that's what's interesting about it, is it seems like it would be ideal. But when you get in there, it's a lot of what is Blackness? Is, you know, Blackness is not a monolith, but how many people actually believe that? And what, you know, what does it mean to be Black? And so this play really explores that at the intersection of queerness. And it's very exciting.
Yeah, I love that you say that it is not a monolith. So often with cultural communities, it's assumed like all Asian Americans, you know, like know each other or something, right? So what are some of the conflicts in this, you know, what we want to think of as a utopia?
Well, it's you know, a lot of it is about keeping people out and keeping people in. And there's a degree of Blackness. You know, for instance, I am a mixed race Black man, and my mother is, you know, a white Swedish woman. And so when I read this play, I almost thought, well, you can't direct this because you're not Black enough. But what is Black enough? And so that's a lot of the questions that are explored in the play.
I totally relate to that as a biracial, you know, Asian American, and often feeling, well, am I Asian enough to do this or that? And that can be a really, I don't know, it can just divide yourself in your whole psyche. And
yes,
you have this questioning of yourself and your identity all the time. So I totally relate to that. You know,
right. And that's almost the thing, is like, is there an answer to this, to these questions? Right. Because we're people, we're just, you know, existing.
And it changes day by day.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Oh, wow. Well, speaking of mixed race, I'm intrigued by The White Dress by Roger Q. Mason. Mason is a self-described Black, Filipinx, plus-sized, gender, non-conforming queer artist of color, and the play has both Black and Filipinx family members. Oh, I'm just excited that, you know, there's that cross-section is explored and you have both, you know, Filipino and Filipina and Filipinx, you know, actors in this too. I love the intersection. So I want to hear more about that play, The White Dress. James, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking when we picked these plays, I was like, who should direct these plays? You know, it's not just so much of picking the right play. It's like, who's the right person to tell the story? Who's the right person to have in the role? So Zelos Marchant will be directing this piece. I had Tyler read this and I had Tyler read the other play. And I love that Zelos really resonated toward this because this piece is heavily about gender. You know, the main character, Jonathan, is exploring their gender identity. They're also exploring their sexuality. You've got a father who loves his son, but is not treating his wife very well. He's also exploring his internalized homophobia and his sexuality. And you've got a mother who married her first love, and she realizes that she's possibly losing him. And one of the notes that came up during rehearsal was talking about what that marriage means to her. You know, when we think about divorce and losing her family, you know, the heritage and the traditions that come with that. I just love how deep this play gets in a very short amount of time. And it became very apparent to me that we just had to have the right people playing each one of these roles and just getting the right people in the room for this. So I'm really excited to see the work we do.
And it seems like you have found a lot of the right people for all three productions. Now, one of the arguments that I've heard for years, for decades actually, is the difficulty of finding BIPOC actors for shows. And I've also heard that comment regarding BIPOC LGBTQ plus actors as well. And it seems like you were able to cast, you know, and get a creative team that's BIPOC and LGBTQ plus rather quickly. Fancy that.
Right. Who would have thought, eh?
Who would have thought? And, you know, how do you do it? What's the magic, you know, that comes with that? It's about building relationships. You know, I have lived experience. These are people that I know. Even for the documentary I directed, centering trans, femme, and non-binary folks of color in the Pacific Northwest. These are people that I know. I've built up trust with them. And a lot of the work that we're doing moving forward is about trust and love and creating a container where we can take care of each other. Even in this process, I start by bringing up our ouch and oops protocol, just letting actors know, hey, we're discussing some tough topics. If we have to stop for a moment and unpack something, or if something didn't feel right, let's talk about it as a group and make sure that everyone's taken care of in this process. That really, really means a lot to me. And I think that's the magic in having the right cast and having the right artistic team. So I feel really lucky.
And it is the secret for, you know, EDI work too, is building trust and relationships. And that can seem so simple, but it's so hard to do, you know, but it needs to be done. I'm always of the philosophy that if you have the opportunities for more BIPOC and LGBTQ plus talent in town, just do the material that hires them and they will, you know, you'll have a greater talent pool. And to me, that goes for designers and directors as well. It's like, if you don't have that, of course, you're not going to have as many people because there's no opportunities.
Right. And, there, you know, something else to consider for the producers and directors out there, it's the way you present the work. You know, when we had our auditions, we're asking for people that can play these characters authentically. So we're allowing people to self-identify for roles that are specifically gendered. We're allowing actors to come in the way that they would portray this character. We're making sure that we're inviting as many folks as possible. If you've got a headshot, great. If you can snap it with your phone, that works too. If you don't have a resume, that's okay. Just come and read the plays. We have to make it more accessible for folks. That way we can show people that we want them to tell their stories and offer mentorship along the way, because we have to grow the talent within our own communities. So I'm hoping that grows.
Tyler, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, James says, one of my favorite things that James says is lateral mentorship. And, you know, it's the truth is, if we want our work done, we got to do it together. We have to hold each other up. You know, you got to say names in rooms that haven't been in that room yet. And a lot of this process has been us reaching out to our friends, the people that we, you know, love and work with and more maybe haven't had the opportunity to work with. So it's been a lot of community and really growing from that place.
Well, I appreciate that you're giving voice to the lessons that you've learned. What other advice would you give to BIPOC artists who want to produce?
Surround yourself with the best people.
Yeah.
You know, start with love, and most important, be willing to say no. You know, there's some things we have to collectively start saying no. There's certain shows that just shouldn't. Let me back that up.
I just did
mental health first aid today, so I'm gonna rephrase that so I can
good idea.
There are certain people that need to be at the table when certain conversations happen. So even as a Black artist, I did not pick these plays on my own. I asked my colleagues, like, hey, even with Tyler being new to this, like, hey Tyler, I have a decision to make. What do you think about this? I text him. I'm like, I can't make this decision by myself. And not that I'm not capable. I just want to keep the community involved. I want to make sure I'm holding myself accountable by inviting other voices into the conversation, because there's always, everyone has something to add. Everyone needs to be involved in what that leadership looks like. Even if it's telling you what stories you want to produce and I make the final decision or whatever that looks like, we have to be more inviting. And that's not happening. That's not happening. We have to find folks that want us to succeed and find folks that want to give us opportunities and allow us to lead in a place from where we are and our skill sets, and allow us to learn from each other.
Yeah, I'm always kind of surprised when a theater in town just decides to do a BIPOC play and like doesn't really tell anybody who's BIPOC, you know, until it's like announced. You know, I learned that there's a couple Asian American plays in the next season, whenever that is. And I'm going, well, okay, that's news, you know, and I don't know why that makes me feel weird. It's like, of course, you can choose to do your plays and announce them, but it just feels like, have you talked to anybody in the communities or any of the other BIPOC theaters to see if they're perhaps thinking about producing around that time? I don't know. It's just sort of this odd feeling.
Right. I came across the film. I'm not going to put anybody on blast, but I was like, we've got a Black straight person playing a drag queen in a film. And I'm like, I know at least 6 Black drag queens right here in town who would love to have that role, or at least like queer actors. You know, we just don't get a lot of opportunities. This will be my first time playing queer
ever.
And I just don't get to do it. I mean, wow. I did a Bakai last year. I was gender bended a bit, but you know, like just like really telling queer stories. I'm always the slave or the husband, or, and those stories need to be told too. But you know, Martin Luther King had a Black homosexual by his side during that revolution. And even Martin Luther King didn't give him the due that he was due. Mm. And I don't want to ruffle any feathers, but you know, there's always more stories to tell. There's always people that are missing out.
Yeah. That I did not realize that, James. Mm-hmm. Tyler, is this the first time that you've been able to do something that's, you know, your identity?
I have played a queer character before. I was lucky enough to originate the role of Fulana Del Tal in Boom Crackerfly at Milagro. And they were a queer character. And I also, just with my director, Jessica Wallenfels of Into the Woods, just decided to make Jack gay, which was probably the most joyous experience I've ever had, because he is gay.
Yay, Jessica. Yeah. Yay, Jessica.
Yeah. I lived my life. Oh, it was so lovely.
That was so good. I was like, yes.
Yeah. So why can't we do more? I'd like to hear more of those stories. I really would. That's awesome. I really appreciate that, you know, that what you said, James, about Fuse Theater, you know, sort of carving out a space and support for this. And it seems like that should be more of the model that is like, that happens all the time. Do you think that what's happening with Blackout could be the model for other theaters to carve out space like this?
Yes. I mean, if it's important to you, devote some resources to it. And not only devote resources to it, make sure you've got the right voices in the room. Once you give them the resources, back up and let them let you know how you can best serve them. Because a lot of times when we look at the donor model, the board member model of making donations and deciding what work we're going to put on stage, that's not always equitable. Even Portland Center Stage just announced that their entire board has resigned and they're starting from scratch. They no longer have a give-get of 10 grand to be on their board. Like, you know, if you're wanting to make systemic change, you have to be willing to rewrite things and start from scratch. Especially now with what's happened in the past year, what were you doing while people were out in the streets? What were you doing when people were marching on the Capitol? What were you doing at the polls? You know, what you decide to program tells us a lot about that, in my opinion, especially when we want to be better allies. Well, we want cohorts, you know, we need more support and we need more people jumping in, getting their hands dirty.
Interesting. That is, it's very interesting. Well, you know, I do like change. I do like it. You know, sometimes I don't like it, but this kind of change is interesting to me. So yeah. So before we go, I do want to talk about something. During this last year, we work more virtually now. You know, even doing this show, we're not even in the same room together. But, you know, I'm wondering how you're working on Blackout with, you know, these virtual readings. And what have you learned in this process of sort of the virtual theater? How are you doing it and working with the team and the actors and directing? And how is that process for you? And what have you learned from it?
Well, Tyler will probably want to chime in a little bit more because he's already started rehearsal and I haven't. But I have done a number of shows virtually over the past couple of months. And I think the hardest thing is just building trust right at the beginning and just kind of bringing, I think of a circle. I like to think of everything as a circle, as a container, as much as I can, and try to bring people in and allow people to share as much as they're willing. If they don't want to share, they're welcome to opt out of sharing as well. But that trust is really important, making it clear what we're here to do and allowing people to let us know where they're at in the work. Maybe I need to have my camera off for today. Maybe I'm a little distracted because I'm sharing a space with someone and I can't control that. That just makes it easier for people to sink into their bodies. Tyler, did you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to embrace the Zoom, embrace that you're going to be on screens. You just have to acknowledge it, say, I see you, and like, you know, move on and try to build from there. I will say one of the most exciting parts of it for me has been because that, you know, I'm co-directing with Charles Grant and we've got five cast members and we have someone reading our stage directions as well. And it's just become more collaborative because there really isn't a way to be in charge. You know, there's a host, obviously, of the Zoom, right? But it's allowed a space of collaborativeness, which has been really exciting.
Yeah, I like that, actually. You know, I've just worked on a short film, which was directed through Zoom, you know, with the actor and his wife self-filming, right? And it seems like, you know, everybody who's involved in that Zoom call is sort of helping.
Right.
Like, oh, I noticed this, I noticed that. And I understand what you mean about that spirit of collaboration. You know, you are crossing boundaries that you probably wouldn't in the rehearsal room. However, sometimes those boundaries are important to cross. And if somebody's seeing something, you know, they should be able to speak out on it. So
right.
Hopefully, you know, we can carry this sort of collaborative spirit into the real world, you know, whenever that is. So it's just sort of interesting.
Well, I will add that one of the magical things about being virtual is getting all of the playwrights together. So the last day of the festival, the 27th, we'll have our Blackout tea session with Rachel Lynette and Jarrett McCreary and Roger Q. Mason. And it's just going to be a panel discussion with the playwrights moderated by Shireen Jacobs. And I'm going to be co-moderating as well. Just kind of being in the room. I'm not letting an interview happen without me in a room. Tyler talked me into it, so...
I did talk him into it. He is the artistic director. He should be there.
I was low key just kind of like kind of intimidated. I was like, oh my god, these amazing playwrights are coming to support this, but I just feel so lucky to have them, and I'm excited to see why they wrote these plays and why now, and just really talk about the magic of being a writer of color in a time like this.
And I love that Shireen Jacobs, who's a fabulous actor, is moderating. I just love that she's doing that role. So I really, yeah, I'm excited to listen in on that and watch that. I also think that, you know, for the playwrights, it's also a plus for them to be able to be involved so far away, because often, you know, when a theater does your play, if they can't afford to fly you, it's like, oh, okay, well, they're doing my play. But now they're also being produced by a Black queer company, right? So that's pretty exciting, and it doesn't happen that often enough. So I'm sure that they'll be thrilled to be involved in that too.
It definitely feels like a family affair. Shireen Jacobs is also the vice president of the board for Fuse. So it's just great having a Black woman on a board. If I feel like
I did not know that either. You're breaking all kinds of news here.
I'm just sneaking it in. And it just feels good to have her ear. I was like, hey, I need to talk to you about this. There's definitely conversations we have in private, and that's just what we do, you know, just building up community with each other. But it's just great to have her moderating this panel and then have her acting. She's in Tyler and Andrew's piece. So it's just, everyone's just digging in. I'm also acting in the white dress and directing the children of Edgar and Nina. So it's just a big family affair.
I love that. I love that. All hands, you know, all hands on deck, or whatever that term is, right? Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. Fuse Theater Ensemble presents Blackout, a series of readings centering the Black and queer intersection. And the readings are June 24th through the 27th at 7 p.m. each night on Fuse Theater Ensemble's YouTube channel. And you can just follow the link on stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Is it going to be on Facebook too, or is it just the YouTube channel? Do you guys know that?
It's just the YouTube channel, but they'll be able to watch that night, but you also have an opportunity to watch it later as well if you miss it that night, and it's completely free to the public.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't have that info, so that's great. I'm glad that you can do some on-demand viewing too. That's helpful.
Yeah.
So great. Well, I wish you both break a leg, many legs, have a fun time on that Zoom, you know? So James Dixon and Tyler Andrew Jones of Blackout at Fuse Theater Ensemble, thank you for joining me today. And it's such a pleasure to see you and to talk with you and to catch up too.
Thanks, Demi. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us.
That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks for spending time with us, everyone who's listening. So till next time, I'm Demi Roberts.